David, thanks very much for joining us. It's been a year since we caught up in London. What's the last 12 months been like for you?
It's been highs and lows. When I first came back to England, it was a bit of a whirlwind of meeting various different people, seeing the family, all the reporters, lawyers. Everything that had been taken from me for 22 months all suddenly thrown in my face within the period of a few days. So, to say it was overwhelming is an understatement. Just opening your emails for, 2 years is bad enough. So, it's been a lot. The first thing that I set about, obviously, was to go and see the family, and that's obviously something very, very important. But then it was, going and see the lawyers and ensuring that I had a good team behind me. Unfortunately, the team that I, picked at the time, when you're stuck in a jail, isn't always the one that you would pick if you could sit there and research and Google and go meet them face to face. So I got it about sending a great team of lawyers behind me and working on, proving my innocence for one, but also taking the baddies, as I call those, I put them in two groups. I put them in the group of the businessmen overseas, and I put them in group of the country in itself overseas for what they did, which is, on any standard, I think, really, really terrible. So, a year of repairing 2 years of unmitigated damage, essentially. Firstly, to my health. As everyone knows, I was in the Priory last year for 2 months. I'm currently in a similar psychiatric hospital in London as we speak, finishing off what we started in the Priory. We essentially didn't have enough time to finish off now. I'm there because I get these what can only be described as flashbacks. So I know that you see a lot of our very brave soldiers get similar things when they see horrendous things in combat. And I've seen, apart from what's happened to myself, which, as I've said before, you kind of deal with, it's when you see it happen to other people. I still get a lot of flashbacks about that. And they continued and continued and continued. And because of that, I became somewhat addicted to what we call benzodiazepines, so things like Valium, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of had two problems that arose from that. So I needed to remedy that. So I'm back in hospital now, fixing that. I spent the last few months fixing my knee, which was smashed up from being basically beaten up by the police in Dubai. My shoulder, a similar thing. Again, fixing that. Having operations to my mouth, to my cheek, is one that I still have to have done. So health-wise, a ridiculous amount of fixing everything, both in terms of physical and mental well-being. But I think, hopefully, inshallah, as they would say in the Middle East, God willing, as we would say here, in 2 weeks we're there. I'm feeling better. We tested how well I was yesterday, and I was invited to speak to Parliament about torture in the Middle East, and there were various other people who had been tortured in the UAE. A Syrian businessman and some other businessmen, and they were there talking about their experiences, family members talking about their experiences of people who are currently there or on hunger strike. And, that's Europeans, that's Brits, that's, people from the Middle East, from all businessmen around the world that are having similar scenarios to what I did, where Dubai's weak legal system is used by unscrupulous people as a litigation tactic. And so we decided it would be myself and the psychiatrist that I should go there and I should, see how I could deal with speaking about to a wide audience of people what happened to me, how it felt like, and meeting people that it happened to. And it was a really, I don't want to sound like one of these, Californian, one always describes them as a Californian nut job sitting up a hill meditating somewhere, but it was a really good experience to meet people that had come through what I had come through, and to realize that, you're not the only one, that it happens to lots of other people. But then that gives you the drive to ensure that it doesn't happen to more people, and that people know about what is going on there and what still, a year after I've been back and a year after all the newspaper reports and, you know, and all the information, is still happening. Now, you know, in relation to the GFH, the people that did it to me, I was speaking to a couple of their ex-employees, and after they did their little trick on me, they tried it on other senior British employees. And, you know, they'll probably deny that, I'm sure, but, you know, it's just terrible. So that's fixing the medical side. In terms of work, I mean, it's been difficult because of the amount of time I've had to spend on medical. But one of the things that I have done is that I've teamed up with a lady called Radha Sterling. And Radha has run a charity in Dubai that focuses on people like me and others that get caught up in the system in Dubai. That's called Detaining Dubai. I've been helping her with that. That's voluntary work. But I haven't been able to do much. But what we've also done is set up a quasi-law firm, if you like, called Sterling Haig. And that's something which in future I'll be focusing on, as well as sport.
Let's talk about your battles with GFH, because that's been ongoing as well in the last 12 months. I mean, they're still, I would believe, involved in some shape or form at Elland Road, even though Andrea Radrizzani has taken over the club. I would imagine they've still got some sort of interest across the road. And of course, that's something you've been keeping a close eye on.
Well, they do. I mean, you know, my battles with them obviously have been ongoing for, 4 years? Well, it probably will be 4 years if we include the battles whilst I was at Leeds in trying to get them to pay money so the club could run. So, you know, I've had 4, maybe even 5, you could say, if we start the battles in 2012. 5 years of battles with them progressively getting worse. We're still fighting. We're still in court. All I can say is that to date, and touch wood, every hearing that I have had in England before an English judge, I have basically come out on top. And so far, we've had two hearings. The first one I represented myself, and I finally managed to release my money, which had been denied me by countless Dubai judges who just would not let me have access to my money to pay lawyers. I came, you know, in January this year, I'd had enough. I wrote an application myself. Obviously, I am a lawyer, but I'm not a litigator. And the two very different, you know, similar to a GP and a brain surgeon. But I wrote an application, stood before the judge myself. It was, even for me, a harrowing experience. And the judge just looked at me and said, well, this is your money. Why haven't you used it to use it for lawyers before? And I pointed across to the GFH who were there. I think there was probably about 8-9 of them in terms of their lawyers versus me, and said, well, they basically frustrated every single attempt, and the Dubai courts wouldn't give me access, and I was locked up, so I couldn't get access to anything. He said, well, it's your money. Pointed to the GFH lawyers and said, you know, write a letter to the bank saying you immediately consent to release his money. So that enabled me to get my lawyers back on board. So that was one of the first big steps forward, and we're working now to get more money released. I've got to sell, unfortunately, some of my assets to fund these legal battles. And so they carry on now in terms of their involvement in Leeds, which I think is, you know, for me, ignoring my battles with them. But as a Leeds fan, do I want a business like that with people? Not only what they've done to me, but what they did to Leeds and what the type of people they are and where they got that money from in the first place. We all know it came from Iran. Do we want them involved in the club? Now, they, as I understand it, still have a massive lump of debt in the club, essentially a mortgage. Does that mean they have a mortgage over Elland Road? I don't know. I haven't seen the recent documents, but, you know, I think what's happening with the club at the moment is fantastic. It's great. It's what I wish I could have done had I had normal, sensible people behind me with money. You know, I didn't. I had, you know, lunatic crooks, basically, with egos bigger than you could imagine. And, you know, my concern is that they should have no involvement in the club going forward whatsoever. And I think, well, I would hope that most fans would agree with me.
I think they would agree with you, David, because, you know, that's that time at Leeds United almost leaves a bit of a bad taste in the mouth for Leeds United fans now. And there's so much positivity coming out of Elland Road at the moment with what Andrea Radrizzani's doing with the buying back of Elland Road.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think the next thing is, if they are involved, which I think they are still, they're owed money, how do we get rid of them? And let's get them gone. Because, I don't think we want them investing in England, let alone in our football club. And I say that as a fan now. And I know through, experience, the type of people that they are, how willing they are to break international laws. And I do now accuse them of being crooks and liars and cheats, something which I think Ken accused them of about 3 or 4 years ago after he'd sold the club to them. Now, I think perhaps that's one of the things that the fans want to look at in terms of how do we get rid of them? How do we clean up them finally?
And from your own personal point of view, your own personal battles with GFH, how do you see the next few weeks, months, maybe a year or so progressing?
I mean, I think that to put it in perspective, I'm told that they have probably spent now somewhere in the region of £10 to £12 million in legal and PR and various other fees in chasing me. It should be more than evident to anybody that this isn't about money. This is about a personal grudge between Hisham and myself, and one that he has to win, because if he loses, he loses his job, he loses his respect in Bahrain. It's a small island that is essentially life's over, as it were. So it's become a personal vendetta where he's using his shareholders' money, because of course it's a public company, to pursue me. I mean, the level of harassment that I get from their lawyers is comedy. And to give you one example, I went out one weekend and I was ill, recovering with knee surgery, but still able to hobble to a seat. I had breakfast, someone took a picture of me, put it on my Instagram or other, and GFH's lawyers, a chap called Robert Dugans, who loves himself quite a lot, printed that out, patched it to a letter, sent it to me and said, "Well, you look very well in this picture." I mean, that's the level of harassment that I get from them on a daily basis. So it's not a case of David's done something wrong, let's take him to court, let's do this. It's let's just harass the hell out of David and make his life a misery. And we're not paying for it. It's our investors' money. We don't care. Do I expect it to go on and on and on? I do. I expect it to go on for 3, maybe 4 years. There's the appeal. There's an appeal in Dubai coming up in September, which the Dubai authorities know that what they did was so bad, they are actually paying the legal fees for it. They themselves are paying for my lawyers. Now, what country in the world does that happen in? It shows you that people have started to realize, what have we done here? What mess have we got ourselves into? And now that I'm back safe in England and able to expose what people have done, what judges have done, in Dubai, and the truth and the facts and the evidence, and I've gathered together witnesses who saw people forging invoices whilst I was in Leeds. These people were staff of GFH forging invoices in their offices. These people were too scared to speak before, because they were employed there. They're from countries where people could easily be frightened. But now they're no longer scared to speak. So I think, come next year, we're going to have a great big showdown in a British court, which is exactly what I want. And I want Hisham, on that dock being cross-examined. And I want Jinesh Patel there and Salim Patel there. And I want my lawyers to be able to cross-examine them and question them on what they did, where the money came from to buy Leeds, and everything that they've done. And that's something that, believe it or not, since 2014, there has been no new evidence from GFH in any hearing whatsoever. Apart from a little bit on the prior prosecution, the main hearing, they've hidden. Hisham has never, ever given any evidence. He wants to hide in Bahrain. So I think it's about time that we bring them over here, bring them to England and say, right, you can't hide anymore. Tell us your side of the story. Prove what you're saying. Stop spending millions and millions and millions of pounds on lawyers. and prove your story with real documents, real facts, and real evidence. And they won't be able to because they're liars.
Are you confident that that's going to actually happen in this country? Or do you think that one of these cases might have to be tried in Dubai? And does that mean that you'd need to go back to Dubai? And I would imagine that's something you don't want to do.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna start putting some documents onto the website Justice for Hague. We've got an appeal in Dubai in September, and I asked my lawyers to write to them and ask them to guarantee me safe passage to Dubai and a return from Dubai. And they wrote back and they said, "Well," and we're going to put it on the website and we'll send it across to you so you can put it on yours. They wrote back and said, "Well, he's more than welcome to come, but we can't guarantee him safe passage," in more or less those words. So, I don't anticipate winning anything in Dubai because it's so corrupt. And if I win anything in Dubai now, they then admit that not only did they keep me for 5 months of Twitter and then acquit me, they kept me for another 15, 16 months longer than they should have done. So 22 months. So I don't expect to win anything in Dubai. I've got high hopes for England. I'm still up against an army of lawyers that GFH has. They are paying, as I said, ridiculous amounts of money to lawyers and investigators. And they are following my every move, my every tweet, everything I put on Instagram. And, we'll start putting some of the letters up so that people that are interested can see the level of harassment. I mean, one of the things I've had to do, because it got so bad and it got so strange, was that I did actually have to make a complaint against one of GFH's external lawyers because I felt that it was going from the professional doing your job to the personal harassment level. Hopeful for England. Even though, we don't have as many lawyers, we don't have that type of resources. In Dubai, I don't expect much, but frankly, I don't really care.
And I suppose that they're just always going to be, until this is resolved, David, this is always going to be a sort of shadow that hangs over you. But and the memories of it, like you say, you're struggling with the sort of PTSD. And I suppose until this is put to bed, this is always going to be in the background.
Well, it is. I mean, even, the mental side is one thing. But for me, it's the time that it takes in doing these, as you know as well, I'm taking the country to the United Nations. The time that takes in the last, it's basically taken, every day since I've been here, since I came back from Dubai, has been spent on legal cases or in hospitals. And I've had no time to work. I need to work. I need to make money. And I need to carve out a new career for myself. And my plan is that will be helping people in law, but also in financing sport, which is something that I have a particular interest in. And that's something which we're trying to develop at the moment. But I just don't have the time for it because I spend so much time fighting with GFH. So, it would be great. A lot of people have said to me, "David, why don't you just walk away from it and, just get on with your life?" And the thing is, would you do that if someone had done something so very wrong to you and so very bad? And even if we just look at the Twitter case, there's absolutely no disagreement. I was kept for 5 months. I was acquitted twice. No one's even said sorry. That's 5 months of my life there alone, ignoring the case that there are disagreements about. Nothing's happened. So you can't let someone get away with doing that. And the thing for me is that I feel I have a responsibility because, as I saw yesterday when I went to an event in Parliament, there are so many other people that don't have the ability to get, I've got the ability to get a little bit of press, whereas, XYZ businessman from Sudan or Syria, wherever they may be, that is mistreated in Dubai, cannot get that attention. And things need to change. And the thing about Dubai is that they can change. Human rights there can, it's a place where you could see realistically some recognition of human rights in the Middle East. I think there, and possibly Qatar, the other countries, I don't think, you're ever going to see very much development in human rights. And that's something that I'm, trying to help if I can.
Do you think with GFH now, do you think it's more of a personal thing between GFH and yourself, rather than a business issue. Like you say, they're trailing everything you do online, trailing everything you do on Twitter, on social media. Is this more of their problem with you personally, and maybe sexuality? Is that their issue?
Yeah, I think you look at it this way. If you take it down to its bare bones, they say I stole £3 million of their money. That's basically the bare bones of what is behind all of this. They say I stole £3 million of their money, and they're very angry with me because I basically supported Leeds. And in their terms, Salim Patel said to me once in a message, Hisham thinks you've gone to the dark side. And by that, he meant that I was basically supporting the club, supporting the fans, and supporting the management, and, you know, not doing what Hisham and Salim wanted. And, you know, if it was anything other than a personal vendetta, would you spend 11 million to recover three? You wouldn't. No one would. Now, you know, and if we go back to the very early days, they tried to settle with me. They approached us. Salah was involved. You know, there were settlement discussions, but those settlement discussions involved basically me keeping my mouth shut when I got home, and that's something that I'm not ever prepared to do. And so there was no settlement, because I think people need to know what type of people they're dealing with. And, you know, my sexuality did come into it. It was something for them which, you know, I was told recently, actually, by, you know, a former member of the group staff, that was one of the reasons that they really wanted to punish me, because I was gay, and because Hisham and Salim particularly they describe themselves as Islamists, you know, and I've often asked them what they mean by that, but they are, you know, towards the extreme of the religion. And, you know, for me, being, you know, a gay man, that to them, you know, as far as they're concerned, you know, that's the worst thing that could possibly happen. And the fact that I was their colleague, and obviously they found out about that through various different times, but obviously when I brought Robbie Rogers to the club and we did that fantastic event when we supported Stonewall, and we became the first club to do that, and Robbie Rogers launched his Beyond It campaign. But, you know, that's England. Being gay in England is, as it should be, legal. It's perfectly normal. You know, we are all one people. We don't allow discrimination against people on grounds of their sex, their race, their gender, their sexual orientation, or any of those things. But Hisham and his religion, or his version of the religion, and Salim's version of the religion do. To answer your question, yes, I do. I think because I'm gay, that's one of the reasons they are pursuing what is nothing now more than a personal vendetta against me, and it continues to this day. You know, which other lawyer, I've never, being a lawyer, I've never, ever, ever experienced a lawyer that would send a picture of someone's Instagram saying, you look happy. That's just strange, and it's also quite unnerving.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be unnerving, really. And only recently, you know,
that letter, by the way, what I'll do, I'll put it up. I'll ensure that it gets put up on. I'll send it across to you guys so you can see it, and so you can see the and any more letters that we get like that, we'll send across so that your listeners can see that this isn't about money. This isn't about anything else. This is a personal vendetta, and it's about scaring me and intimidating me. And quite a few of my friends were joking, are you sure it wasn't Salim on the motorbike? And I was like, I'm pretty sure. But to be honest, I wouldn't put it past them, although I'm not being serious there.
Well, actually, let's just go into that a little bit further, because people may not know, or they may know, that it wasn't so long ago that you were mugged in London. Tell us about what happened.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, like I said, I'm in a psychiatric hospital, and one of the things that we do is that we... you know, I'm allowed out of the hospital at certain times, because what we want to try and do is put myself in traumatic situations or busy situations and ensure that I can cope. And one of the things I needed to go to get my iPhone sorted out, because the battery wasn't working. And so we picked the busiest time on the busiest day to go to the busiest street, which is Regent Street, Apple, on a Saturday. And we've gone into Apple, you know, done what was necessary with the iPhone, and we all know how annoying the batteries are because they don't last long enough. Came out, you know, was with people from the hospital who were minding me, and basically was mugged by two black leather-clad people on a black motorbike. Came up, you know, basically grabbed my arm to the extent that even now I've got a bruise on it 2 weeks later, yanked my phone out my hand and, you know, zoomed off. I mean, at the time it was a bit of pandemonium because I think people thought something more sinister was happening, you know, because your main shopping street, you know, you've got a mugging going on, it's involving a car, there's people screaming. No one knows what's happening. I mean, then when we did realise that I and some other chap who was behind me chased them up the road because they'd actually stopped at the traffic. I don't know if anybody knows, Regent Street and Oxford Street cross each other at big crossroads. So we had chased them up there. But, you know, by that time they'd gone. It wasn't... losing my iPhone with all the data, which, you know, you hope you back up, but it's never backed up as much as you wanted it to be backed up. You know, that's also taken a lot of time to do. But it wasn't a nice experience. First time ever that I've been mugged, you know, being tall and stocky. You know, people tend to leave you alone. You know, I spoke to the police quite a lot. They were good. They came on scene straight away. And they said that in London and in other big cities, and maybe in Leeds as well, I don't know, but, you know, it's becoming very common. And it's often a lot of people from other countries that come here, and a lot of people, a lot of youngsters, a lot of teenagers that actually do this, that get bikes, usually steal them, wait around the corner, sit outside shops where they sell expensive goods. You know, Apple is obviously one, Louis Vuitton is another. And as soon as someone comes out with the bag, they you know, there's their target. They go, they grab the bag, and off they go. And they get away with it. And if they get caught, they're usually underage or from a different country. So, you know, it's a slap on the wrist, and that's about it.
I suppose, like you said, with one of your friends saying, you can put two and two together and come up with GFH sometimes in these things.
Well, I mean, the thought crossed my mind for a second, but I thought, you know, I mean, I joke about it, but then at the end of the day, they did lie to me, human traffic me, bring me to a different country, have me beaten up, you know, in part because I was gay, set me up and harass me for 4 years. I doubt it. You know, there's something in me that says that this wouldn't be their style, but you never know. I mean, it's probably very silly of me to think that they would do that, but look at what they've done in the past. Would you put it past them? I don't know. Like I said, honestly, I don't think it's them. I think it's just muggers that are targeting big cities. And I mean, is that something that's happening in Leeds? And if it's not, then perhaps, you know, it's something your listeners need to be careful of, because certainly since that happened, when I've been going out, I hold my phone very closely, you know, and or I keep it in my pocket, and I never stand near the pavement with my phone, because it's, you know, you realize how easy it is for someone to take, I mean, you know, what's an iPhone, you say £600-700, how easy it is to get that from you.
Well, David, let's look to the future, shall we? And you're getting back involved in football in down in Cornwall, and that must be quite exciting for you.
Yeah, it's really nice, actually. I'm really enjoying it because it's really, really, I mean, you couldn't get more grassroots and, you know, more further away, I think, from Championship and Premiership football in terms of location as well as in terms of the actual football itself. And particularly because Cornwall is a county where, you know, football's always the poor relation of rugby. Everything, even when I was at school down there, it was all about rugby, you know, from the, you know, what you play at school to what you go and watch at the weekends. I mean, I didn't even know Penzance Football Club existed until they asked me to come and help them, and that was over Twitter. And but it's really enjoyable. I mean, Penzance is a community chartered club, so, you know, it's a real community club. They've got ladies teams, disabled teams, kids teams, you know, and It's been around since 1888, which, correct me if I'm wrong, which is, I think, the same year as the FA. And they've got a nice little ground at the bottom of a park near the seafront, and a stand and a clubhouse. So it's real proper grassroots football with people that are passionate about the football as well. I'm really enjoying it. It's good fun.
And not only football, but local politics you're getting involved with as well down there.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing as well. I mean, it's strange in a way, because had what had happened, you know, to me, had what GFH not happened to me, if I'd stayed in England, you know, I'd have been probably, may well have been stayed running Leeds, and at least for a bit, until Massimo got fed up with me, and would have, you know, been on politics on a larger level. And now what's happened is that I'm doing exactly the same thing, but on a kind of a more community-based level and closer to the people. So, you know, I'm a local councillor as well, and since May, and that, you know, getting involved in everything from you know, making sure the footpaths are in use and that are, you know, usable, and planning permission, and all these types of things, and really helping the community. So I'm actually really enjoying it. It's a complete change of lifestyle to what I had in Dubai and Leeds, and it's nice to relax, basically, you know, take a bit of time out. But the funny thing is, though, and I've said it before, is that particularly with the football, it's exactly the same problems, you just take a few zeros off. So, you know, so at the moment we're getting sponsors for the new season, you know, we've got to get players into the new season, attract them, and you know, a sponsorship at Penzance, if you just, you know, ranges from £100 up, but that's not quite the same as Leeds. And, you know, so it's the same thing. And that's one of the things that I'm focusing particularly on, is getting more money in from sponsorship, getting more bums on seats, basically, and getting the football club better known in the schools. Going out to the schools, going out to the community and saying, look, you do realise you've got a football club and we've got a fantastic ground, a great stand, and, you know, it's only a couple of quid to come watch it on the weekend, so why not come for a change instead of the rugby? So that's something that we're doing a lot of, and it's been successful and well, I think. I mean, it's great fun.
And David, just to wrap up, it's great to hear a lot of positivity coming from your voice, and great to hear that the future is looking pretty happy, and happy in your personal life and in your business life as well.
Yeah, I think we've got the working title for the book is Football, Prison, Freedom, and you know, I think we're now well into the freedom session. As much as GFH would like to disturb me on a daily basis, and they you know, I'm not going to let them, and I'm enjoying life again, and you know, getting ready to live it.